a big boat on the pole of the conga. Then what with a cobbling up of the yawl, on a patching and mending the nets for the trawl, on a rising early, on a going to bed late, on a dreaming of scallops as big as a plate, on the hooks and the creels and the oars and the gut, you'd say there's no room for a little slut. But hout's and mother is not the case. On a pretty face is a pretty face. And through the whole kyle, as bright as a star, a gell slips in, and there you are. Well, that was just the way with me and the gell I'm speaking of, Betsy Lee. Ah, mates, it's wonderful too, the years you may live dead on end with your eyes and your ears right alongside of the lass that's going to be your sweetheart, and you never know. That's the way. For her father and mine was neighbours, and both in the fisherman line. And their cottages stood on the open beach, with a nice bit of garden the back of them each. You know the way them houses is fixed, with the pigs and the hens and the children mixed. And the mothers go round when the nights begin, and quips up their own and takes them in. Her father was terrible fond of flowers, and his garden was twice as handsome as ours. A mortal keen eye he had for the vermin, and his talk was always of planting and farming. He had roses hanging above his door, uncommon fine roses they was to be sure. And the joy of me heart was to pull them there, and break them in pieces on Betsy's hair. Not that Betsy was much of a size at the time, I mean, but she had big eyes, so big and so blue and so far asunder, and she looked so solemn, I used to wonder. That was all, just baby play, knocking about the boats all day, and sometimes a lot of us taking hands and racing like mad things over the sand. It wouldn't have been bad for some of us if we'd never gone further and never feared worse, if we'd never grown up and never got big, if we'd never took the brandy swig, if we were skipping and scampering and capering still on the sand that lies below the hill, crunching its grey ribs with the beat of our little pattering naked feet. If we just kept children upon the shore forever and ever and ever more. Now the beauty of the thing when the children plays is, the terrible wonderful length the days is, up your jumps and out in the sun, and you fancy the day will never be done. And you're chasing the bumbies humming so cross in the hot sweet year among the goss, or gathering bluebells, or looking for eggs, or pelting the ducks with their yellow legs, or a-climbing and nearly breaking your skulls, or a-shouting for devilment after the gulls, or a-thinking of nothing, but down at the tide, singing out for the happy you feel inside. That's the way with the kids, you know, and the years do come, and the years do go. And when you look back, it's all like a puff, happy and over and shorted off. Well, I never took notions on Betsy Lee, nor no more did she, I suppose, on me. Till one day digging upon the sand, Gibbons, of course you'll understand, a lad that was always a cheeky young sprout, began a pulling the Betsy about, and he worried the wench till her shoulders were bare, and he slipped the knot of her beautiful hair, and down it come, as you may say, just like a shower of golden spray, blown this way and that by a gamesome breeze, and a rip, rip, rippling down to her knees. I looked at Betsy. Oh dear, how she stood, a-quivering all over, and her face like blood, and her eyes all wet with tears like fire, On her breast has swelled higher and higher. On she gripped her sickle with a twitchy feel, and her thumbs started out like a coil of steel. On a cloud seemed to pass from me eyes, on the glory like them you'll see painted sometimes in a story, raised out from her skin. And I saw her no more the child I had always thought her before, but wrapped in the glory and wrapped in the hair, every inch of a woman stood panting there. So I ups with me fists as I was bound, and won for his knob and knocks him down. But from that day, by land and sea, I loved her, oh, I loved her, my Betsy.
Mr. Tom Dodd telling the story of the Postle Tree.
It goes that a certain old Manx local preacher on one occasion entered the pulpit without having prepared his sermon, and he chose his text at random, and he came across that passage where it reads, "Awake, harp, lute and psaltery, I myself will arise right early." His rendering was, "Awake, harp, lute, and psaltery, I myself will arise right early." Now, my dear friends assembled here this pleasant Sabbath morning, I have no doubt but what many of you is well equipped with the words of my text. But whether you have got its inner meaning, the hidden meaning, I cannot say. But I will try to elucidate it this morning. The harp, of course, there's not much need for me to explain that. We've all seen these fellas going about twanging harps, at least they used to be when I was a young fella. In the streets they'd be playing harps, big, big harps outside the houses and collecting money for it. And maybe most of us here this morning, when we've finished our earthly career, we'll have a harp apiece in the celestial regions. I'm hoping so anyway. But the second thing which is mentioned here maybe requires more explanation. Lute. Now, maybe some of you know that in the old days, nation was warring against nation just as they have been all the years since. And out there, where old David and all these others was living, one sick would be fighting against another sick, and maybe a city would be beleaguered by the enemy, and the ones outside would be striving hard to get in, and the ones inside would be doing their best to keep the besiegers out. But in the end, maybe the city would fall, and the besiegers would rush in and put the men and women and children to the sword. And what would he take away with them? Loot. Now the third thing which is mentioned here, the Postle Tree, is a tree which doesn't grow in this country at all. But away there where old David was living, there was big forests full of these here Postle Trees, and the birds of the air would be nesting under the hanging boughs. On the bases of the field would be taking shelter here from the storms that might be arising. And David, my friends, had one of these Postle Trees, a little one, grown underneath the bedroom window in his palace. And one night, when he was just going up to bed, he heard the winds beginning to blow most tempestuous. And he went to the barometer in the hall and he gave it a tap and he said, "My God," he said, "there'll be some deal done tonight." Off he went to bed, and when he was in bed a little while, the winds increased with far more velocity than they had been previously. And he heard a crash outside, and he jumped up, and he looked out through the rainy Venetians, and there he seen that the little Postle Tree had been uprooted and cast down on the ground. And David, my friends, he said, Never mind, little three, he said. I will arise right early. Finding that in the morning, he would try to get it put in towards our position again. So, brethren, David went to bed and slept the sleep of the just. And in the morning, when he woke, he remembered what he had said the night before, I will arise right early. He weren't like a lot of the ones I'm looking at in this chapel this morning, who is mighty swiver with promises the night before, and when the morning comes, another turn or two in the bed, like the sluggard. No, my friends, David wasn't like that. With one mighty bound, he leapt from his bed, and round to the cowhouse at the back, and he got a grape there, and he got one or two men, and down with them to the little tree, and worked at it, and got it put into its old position again. And my friends, aren't we like that little tree? Don't the storms and temptations of life often come beating down upon us or such force, that in spite of all we can do, we are overpowered and cast to the ground? But if we could go to the right source, once more, like David's little tree, we will be standing upright, firm, immovable, and immune from all the shocks that can assail us.